Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another episode of the Crick Picks podcast on Combox TV, where the game lives on. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at DefMango on Twitter, and with the OG trio back for this, we've got Estelle Vasudevan, who you can find at Estelle underscore Vasudev, the number one on Twitter, and then we've got Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. If you're new to Crick Picks, what we do on the show is that we take any generic cricket category and we draft our top five each for that category in a snake-style draft competition, and that basically means that the pick order goes 1-2-3, 3-2-1, and it's a really fascinating topic for this particular episode. It was my idea, so I'll take full credit for it. Greatest fourth innings hundreds in a losing cause. How do we feel, guys?
Terrible.
Estelle has no words.
Yep.
Aren't you glad, Estelle?
Good start to a podcast.
Yeah. Aren't you glad, Estelle, that you don't have first pick?
No, now actually, since Jared kind of confirmed that I was right, I was on the right path, I'm kind of disappointed because that takes away one option I would have had, right?
Yeah.
Well,
now
you'll
have to find two back-to-back.
Yeah, back-to-back ain't that bad. Anyway, Jared has first pick for this one, so please do the honors, Jared Kimber.
This one's easy for me. I wrote about it in my book, so I think it was probably one of the best innings of all time, no matter whether it was in the fourth innings or not. It is Kumar Sangakkara's, is it 192? At Hobart, probably done over by a bad decision at the end as well. It's an incredible innings, really. Shreya just decided to just bounce him for hours, it felt like, while he was batting with the tail. And when he was there, it actually felt like Sri Lanka could win that chase. What was the chase, Estelle? Was it like 425 or something?
Yeah, they still lost by 100 and something, right?
So I have
lost by heaps.
I have it in front of
yeah,
me.
Yeah, there you go.
Australia sets Sri Lanka a target of
96.
507 runs. Mm,
yeah.
It's 2007, Hobart, second test. And Sri Lanka made 410 runs. Out of those 410 runs, Kumar Sangakkara scored 192.
Yeah, and the way he batted towards the end, I just thought it was some of the best batting I've ever seen. It stuck with me ever since. And it went, you know, several seconds ago when you told me what this category was, it was the first innings that came to mind.
Fair enough. I mean, I definitely had it on my list as well. Not as my number one, though, but it is
not as number one.
Very, very close contender for number one for me as well. So,
have you seen it?
Yeah, I saw bits of it. I didn't see
I'm shocked that you don't have it as number one if you've seen it, because it's so dramatic.
Yeah, it is quite dramatic. And I mean, he
like,
cover drove
carrying
them
the tail for
a lot in this innings, I remember.
What was that?
He cover drove Australia a lot in this innings, from what I recall.
Cover drove them. He tried to uppercut them. He hooked them. Like, it really was a remarkable innings. Mm.
Anyway,
number one.
So we've gone 2007, right, for number one. And my issue with this particular innings was not about the quality. It was the margin of defeat. I know 507 runs is a massive target, but the deficit was still 96 runs towards the end, right? Which is why I didn't have it as number one.
But that's not his fault. That's because all the other guys went out.
Yeah. Well,
that's because all the other guys got out, though. That's nothing to do with the quality of 100.
Fair enough. All right, so
he made 192 chasing 500. And you're saying, oh, the problem was here. He didn't get them close enough to the 500 they were never going to chase. Oh.
That's also fair. I've clearly rage baited you. And Jared is triggered. All right. I, for my number one pick, will go with Sachin Tendulkar, Chennai, 1999. It was a test match versus Pakistan. It is regarded as one of the all-time greatest test matches ever. And it's remembered for the Chennai crowd giving Pakistan a standing ovation towards the end of the game. Very, very close game. Pakistan ultimately only won it by 12 runs. And in the fourth innings, India had been set a target of 271 runs. And Sachin was mostly a one-man army in this entire innings, right? He scores 136 runs and the next best score is Nayan Mongia with 52. And after that, the third highest score is 10. Right, so it kind of tells you that no one else really did much. It was just Sachin Tendulkar mostly, and then a bit of help from Nayan Mongia. And if you look at how this game was transpiring, right, Sachin had kind of injured his back, I reckon. But India was sitting pretty at 6 down for 254. They were not far away. They were about 17 runs away from the target. And that's where I reckon Saklen gets Sachin. And there's pin drop silence, in the stadium in Chennai. But I think that, you know, it is widely regarded as one of the greatest fourth innings knocks. And the conditions weren't particularly easy either. Sachin was in his prime. And it was a very formidable Pakistan team up against him as well. Like, that bowling attack consists of Wasim Wakar and Saklen. So that's tough work.
And Afridi.
Yeah.
Right? I think Afridi played in that test. True. I think the only thing I would suggest that pulls back a little bit on the epicness of that match is, am I not remembering right that Shahid Afridi made 100 in the third innings?
Yeah, I think
so. Don't tell me how tough the pitch is and then tell me that Shahid Afridi just made 100. Just putting that out there.
Yeah, he scored 141 in the third innings. But yeah, I mean, look, we've seen the documentary. We've seen the highlights plenty of times. And Sachin was on one. And it seemed like as soon as he got out, everyone just accepted defeat and Pakistan had their tails up. And there's that famous huddle by Wasim Akram where he tells his team that all we need to do is get Sachin, guys, and we'll win this game. And that's exactly what happens.
No doubt. Just a reminder though, Kumar's bowling attack was Brett Lee, Mitchell Johnson, Stuart Clark, Stuart McGill. Mm. Estelle, your third pick, is it?
Move on!
Okay.
Hey, the deficit was 12 runs over here, Jared.
Yeah, because it was a low total.
In one of my, I was doing a bit of research for the other one we're recording, and Biram once again didn't miss the opportunity to say that phrase.
Of course.
Oh, he can't help himself. Nope. He's just got obsessed with it.
He mentioned
Stuart McGill is actually going to attack him if he goes to a game in Australia.
Anyway, still back-to-back picks for you?
Yeah, back-to-back picks, and it was a bit tough because losing cause, right? Like, I mean, draws, there were some good innings, I think, in draws. My number one pick, I will give to Nathan Estel, 222. I know it's the highest score as well in a losing cause, in a chase, in a fourth innings chase. Is it still the fastest double 100 in Test cricket?
I think it is, yeah.
Stokes scored the second fastest, not the fastest. So Estel records stands.
Yeah, so coming in at like, I think number five in that game, chasing again 500 and something. He brings New Zealand to within 98 runs, right, in that game. So just kind of, you set a team 500, you know, it's probably not going to be chased down. But that innings that he played and the way he kind of took over things out in the middle, I thought should be, I mean, I would have picked it at number one.
It's a weird one. Because there's an element in this particular innings of him just going, we're going to lose anyway, so I'm just going to slog, right? Mm. And because of that, there's a difference between that and you watch Kumar's innings where Kumar's like, no, I'm just going to keep batting until we win. Mm. And that's not having a go at Astle's innings, but that's why I had it a little bit lower, is just because having seen both of them, I just think with Astle, he's just like, fuck it, I'll just hit some ball, fours and sixes, and then it just doesn't stop. Whereas that's very different, I think, than the other two innings on this. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think Kumar actually believed he could win the game, and I don't think Astle could till very late.
Which is kind of crazy, right?
Yeah.
Like, whereas Kumar thought that because Sri Lanka has never beaten Australia.
Yeah. And whereas with Astle, it felt a little bit more like, wait a minute, I'm just going to keep going and see what happens. I mean, it's a phenomenal innings. Yeah. But yeah, I just think it was. It's a very, very different kind of situation. I think one of the other differences here is that there was no way of batting out for the draw, was there? Because it was wasn't it? I'm trying to remember. Was it in the first innings? Yeah, England didn't make any runs in the first innings. And so it was obviously one of those New Zealand wickets. It was just a green top that flattened out. So suddenly it was like, well, we don't have enough time. There's too much time, sorry. So it is a fascinating one. It certainly deserves to be on this list.
Yeah, I think it is fair to have it in the top three. Christchurch, although, you know, that element kind of takes away from it because, as you said, the pitch had flattened out by the fourth innings. But then again, there are going to be other hundreds on this list where that happened. And, I mean, look, fastest double 100. He ends up with 222 off 168. And he was the last wicket to fall as well in that chase of 550. They fall 98 runs short. But I think your Sangakkara logic applies over here as well because the target was completely out of bounds. But then I can see how he was kind of just slogging it. Probably not thinking he could win it, but everyone remembers the knock.
Yeah, I think Jared's rationale is that Sangha wasn't slogging, no? Mm.
Yeah. He thought he was going to chase it. I don't know why, but he thought he was going to chase it. There's a ferocity there. Whereas I think with Astle, he probably starts to think that later on, right? When he's suddenly like, oh, we've got a chance of winning this.
Also, isn't it a bit shocking that this innings, which is the fastest double 100 in Test cricket, came in 2002 and that still hasn't been usurped?
Yep.
I think that's quite
fascinating. That's one thing that makes it special, right? Mm. Because, I mean, the way things are, the way batting is going right now, to think that it's not just the fastest double 100 in fourth innings, no, it's the fastest double 100.
Yeah.
So.
All right, then. Your second pick, Estelle.
Okay, so now this is where I go it's all downhill from here.
Okay.
Awesome. Can't ask for more.
Because obviously I had Zanga and I had Sachin's one. So now my options are very limited.
There's one very obvious one, by the way, if you think about it.
Not obvious to me. So I've got three. I'm just going to go with a biased pick because I've watched every single ball of that innings. Sanath Jayasuri's 131 against Australia in Kandy. That was, I believe, Shane Warne's like comeback test series after the drug ban, if I'm not mistaken.
What year was it? I just can't
99, I think.
Oh, no, that can't
be. That might have been after the shoulder.
After the injury, yeah. So he had, Warne had like a crazy series. Sri Lanka lost the series 3-0.
Oh, no, it was 2004. It was 2004. Right, it was after the drug ban.
It has to be drug ban. And he also takes his 500th test wicket at Gaul, right, in this series. Warne.
Yes, I think so. Because he had third, maybe 25 wickets, 30 wickets in that series. Because he was just, like, Sri Lanka couldn't play him. And that last, I also think it was Arjuna's last series or there was a fairway or something. But it was a very memorable one because although Sri Lanka lost 3-0, they very nearly pulled off like some really big, like great wins in that series. And this was one of them. Sanath just went absolutely berserk in that fourth innings, 131 of 145 to sixes and 17 fours. Nobody else crossed 50, right? Sri Lanka ended up losing by just 27 runs in the end, chasing 351. So it was a crazy innings from Jayasuri. And I think the dismissal was also like he middled it, but it went like straight to the fielder at deep mid wicket or something like that. And if he had stuck around, Sri Lanka would probably chase that down. So yeah, biased pick. And I'm sure neither one of you had that in your list. But to me, from what I've watched, one of the best in the fourth innings.
I think the margin of defeat is quite low and it's just one man army from Sanath, right? So it does qualify. I had it at my long list. I actually got Varun to do some work over here. I told him to rank these by percentage of team runs scored and also after that by margin of defeat. So I got a few different filters on it. And Sanath was quite high on the margin of defeat one, as you can imagine. It's at home though. And Australia, barring Warne, have what? Lee and Kasparovic in this series?
Kasparovic. Is McGill there? No. Yeah, Stuart McGill is there.
Oh, Stuart McGill is there.
Gillespie and Kasparovic.
It's a pretty good bowling attack.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty good, actually, now that I come to think of it. Anyway, so your two picks are done, Estelle.
But I liked the way we've gone about things, Behram. You have got help and made your list with the numbers. Jared heard about this 5 minutes before we started. And I started doing my research about an hour ahead, so...
Well, 5 minutes
that's,
is...
That's how we all work.
You're stretching it when you say 5 minutes. Literal seconds before we started, I sent Jared the list.
I'm still looking it up now.
All right. So for my second pick, I'm going to go a bit mainstream. And I will pick...
Not like you?
Yeah. Well, I think I'm going to go with Virat Kohli Adelaide 2014. It was a wonderful knock. I mean, no one... kind of gave India a shot at chasing down 364, even though they were a really, really solid side. And I know Murali Vijay scores 99 in this innings as well, but that's it. He was the only one who gave some support to Virat. Virat, of course, a very fluid knock. His 141 runs came off 175 balls. And I remember he was just dominating Australia. It really felt like he's going to go ahead and win that test match for India. And not to mention, of course, he'd scored 100 in his first dig as well. So twin hundreds for Virat in this test. But I remember watching it live. I was watching with two of my Indian friends. And we were studying. We had the game on and I had a bet on. As well, I had placed a bet that Virat Kohli will just score overs every 10 over mark. I was betting overs and he'd continue to get me there. I won a lot of money that night, right? Like he was just like on a roll. And Nathan Lyon takes a 7-for in this innings. India ultimately lose this test by 48 runs. But for the longest time, it felt like this is going to be a sure shot chase. When Virat goes out, India are 6 down for 304. And they just completely buckle after that. They're all out for 315. There was no resistance beyond Virat Kohli. And if I'm not wrong, I might be. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong. Virat rates this 100 as his best ever.
I would hope he does. I had it number 2 on my list, guys.
Okay. So
it's one of the best innings I've ever seen.
Yeah. Estelle, did you watch it live?
No, I didn't. But I caught, parts of that innings. Obviously, the 200s in both innings. And that was the really fiery series, right?
Hmm. No, that was the one they lost.
No, that's the Phil Hughes series.
Yes.
So this is the test match that just happens after Phil Hughes' funeral.
Oh, okay.
One of the problems with this, it's not an issue with it, but just I think there is an element of the 200s he makes in that test match kind of blurring together a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think it also shows the best of Virat Kohli, that entire test match. Like for a man who's had some incredible peaks, I don't think he's ever going to do anything better than that test match. And he has a great test match in Johannesburg as well. But this is because of everything he does here. I just think it's
also
so high.
I think it's worth mentioning that in the last test of the series, Dhoni just retires effective immediately, which we've seen today from Kane Williamson, oddly enough. And Kohli is the next captain. And I think this test match must have had, a role to play in that as well. Dhoni probably felt it's time that he takes over.
Well done to Kane Williamson also for stealing the Thunder away from Ben Stokes.
Yeah. He's done him a solid favor. And Jared, I can't find the ads, man. Can you find the ads? Because it's time for an ad break. They're gone, aren't they?
They have disappeared.
Anyway, so we will be right back after a short break. Go nowhere. Keep watching Crick Picks. See you shortly.
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
Welcome back to Crick Picks. You guys are with Behram, Estelle and Jared, and we are currently drafting the greatest fourth innings hundreds in a losing cause. And Estelle and I have picked 200s each. We're back to Jared for back-to-back picks.
Okay. So I think you've got some of my favorite ones. I'm gonna go rogue here. And I think it's a fascinating innings considering everything. I can't remember the year, but hopefully Behram remember the year. I know it was there. But Asad Shafiq in the day-night.
Screw you, man. I wanted to pick that one. It was
what year was that?
2016. Pakistan needed to chase down a record total, somewhere around the 450 mark.
I remember that night. No one had really covered day-night tests before, right? They were still really, really early on. And Brisbane is not a city that is set up for day-night tests. Like, Adelaide is. Adelaide, you can get food and drink quite easily after hours. Brisbane just shuts down, right? And I remember we came out of that ground. It was all the cricket folk people. I think Damien Fleming came out at the same time. And everyone was just exhausted because Asad Shafiq had just turned what was going to be a very easy victory into this never-ending night for all of us. And we kind of all knew that it would drop off the next day, because that's how cricket works, right? You have to start again and everything. But at the same time, it was an incredible innings considering it's Australia and the pink ball. All these things are happening. But it's also got a really funny backstory, which I like to explain when I say this is why we need women in cricket, which is essentially Steve Smith went up to Gunnar Gould and said, do you have to ask for the extra half an hour? Because Pakistan were 8 wickets down. And it was like fucking midnight. It was like 2 a.m. in the morning. It was so late. And he said, do you have to ask for the extra half an hour? And Gunnar said, no, you don't have to ask for it. Gunnar said, yes. Because Gunnar thought, I'm trying to get this story right. I think Gunnar thought that Smith had asked for the extra half an hour. Whereas Smith had asked whether he had to ask for the extra half an hour. And so Australia was exhausted, and then suddenly it meant that Pakistan and Asad Shafiq put on more runs at, midnight playing this game. I just remember walking out and feeling drained. What did he end up making? Was it 160-odd?
No. So Pakistan, I have this game in front of me now. Pakistan were chasing 490, and Australia had declared in the previous innings, right? Thinking that 490 is going to be enough runs, and they were off to a solid start. But then Asad Shafiq scores 137 off 207, and it is that knight that you talk about where he really does a lot of damage. He got support from here and there, but it's a pink ball test. It is the GABA, which is, or at that point, was still Australia's fortress, right? And I remember that come next morning, you know, I woke up super early because it was like, obviously, could have been a historic day. And then he gets that bumper from Stark. And I was feeling at that point, man, if he just hadn't gotten that bumper from Stark, he would have gotten Pakistan over the line.
Yeah, I mean, we honestly thought the ball had just gone flat. Mm. But the way he realized that and capitalized on it against a pretty good attack, right? Like, it's Jackson Bird, not Pat Cummins. But other than that, it's the four bowlers. I'm just looking down, Nick Madison bowled three overs in that game as well. I just thought it was a masterful chase from a position where, because he comes in at number six, and you don't really expect your number six to be the guy in a chase like that. Like, it was an offbeat innings that I will never forget from a guy who has a very forgettable career, right? Like, there aren't, named three other Asad Shafiq memories if you're not a Pakistani fan and you're doing well. And yeah, it's not like he had a short career. Like, he played a lot of games. Like, he was like a shit Ian Bell, right, for Pakistan for a long period of time. He was always there, but if you ask someone to come up with a memory, they'll just look at you blankly for a little while, right? And this is the one.
Yeah, this is definitely his biggest, you know, contribution to cricket, I would say. This was nearly a record
And
chase.
Everyone in Pakistan was probably like, "What? How can this continue to go on?"
Yeah. I mean, look, I will kind of bat for Asad Shafiq a bit. I think that, you know, obviously when he got promoted up the order, it didn't quite work out. And number six is an easy batting role, but he does have the most hundreds at number six. And also he used to have this penchant to score away hundreds. So I think he has one at the Oval. He has one at the GABA. I think there's one at Centurion, if I'm not wrong. So that became a bit of a theme. He was like the Rahane of Pakistan. I'll bump him up a spot from Ian Bell. Shit Ian Bell.
Yeah, I think he's a failure. Ultimately, because if you need someone to be a specialist number six for that long, it means you can't groom anyone else in the side and you can't bring an all-rounder in.
Yeah, true. And
you
also,
can't put your wicketkeeper batting. No, I mean, the problem is, as you said, he couldn't bat any higher. Like, there are lots of people, if you gave them, how many test matches did he play? 60?
70 odd, and he played them consecutively as well. So he never got dropped. But also, up until...
What?
Up until Misbah and Yunus retired, he had a very easy job. He was batting behind Azhar Ali,
that's what
Yunus,
I mean.
And Misbah.
It's like... I mean,
I feel like he got a lot of runs against like Sri Lanka and, you know.
Yeah, he used to average 40 plus for the longest time. And then he dropped off so dramatically when he got promoted that he didn't end up averaging 40 in Test cricket.
Yeah. No, look, that innings though, I'll always remember. A bit like, it's almost like the JP Duminy innings at Melbourne where I'm just like, oh, that guy was really good. Just for whatever reason, he couldn't make it work as a career.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, I've got another one here. Got a few good ones on my list, but I just want to get the name of it right. Was it called the Centenary Test, which is the 100-year anniversary test? So we've got the 150 coming up very soon. The 150 anniversary test. It's a bafflingly weird test match. Again, probably a green top when it started, and then flattens out later
what
on. So no one
year
makes
is
any
this?
Runs in the first.
The 100th anniversary.
1977.
1977.
You should know that because you should know when the first fucking test was if you're a cricket journalist.
Yeah, I know.
Jesus
right.
Christ, Bayram.
Especially when we're right at the cusp of the 150th one. I really should
be
able
exactly.
to do some maths.
Even more so now. So England are chasing 463, right? And the bowling attack is Lilly, Walker, Gilmore, O'Keefe. So it's not quite Australia's peak attack, but it's got Lilly, and Walker was a really good bowler as well. Gary Gilmore has a weird career on his own. And they're not really expected to get there. And Derek Randall, who, again, a bit like Asad Shafiq, it's not like Derek Randall is like an all-time great of Test cricket. Like, he averages less than 40, I'm pretty sure, right? And in that game... he makes 174 in that chase. And you talk about one-man armies. I'm just having a look. Yeah, no one else made a 50, right? Mm. And they lost by 35 runs. Mm. And when Randall was there, it looked like they were going to do it. It was probably a little bit that the Lilly went through the tail. That stopped them from getting it because up until that point, they had a huge chance. So it's a huge second inning score, which you don't get many in a loss as we, you know, the top one is, there's only one double hundred, right? It's Astle's double hundred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There aren't that many above 160 either. And not only that, Derek Randall actually gave them a chance of getting there. But I think more poetically, they lost by 45 runs, England, which is exactly what they lost the first test by as well. Ooh. So somehow we ended up in a situation where 100 years apart, we had the identical result. And I think in that first test, when Bannerman makes his runs, we again had this another epic 160, 170, whatever it was that Bannerman made. So there's something incredible about that. But that was probably one of the first big chases where it was where people were like, oh shit, they're going to do this and it's going to be really scrappy. And then unfortunately, Australia just got on top of them at the end.
Yeah, I mean, when I was preparing for this podcast, I told Varun that Jared will surely pick this one. The Randall 100, it's a Jared pick, so we don't need to worry about that one. I'm not going to educate myself about it. I'll wait for that. But no, it seems to be quite a top knock. And that means it's my turn again?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to go full recency bias. And in a very troubled period for the man, as my third pick, I will pick Ben Stokes' knock. At Lords in 2023, Ashes Test, he scores 155 of 214. England are chasing 371 runs. At this point, we expect England to do something, right? Whenever there's a 300 to 400 chase, we're like, okay, this is baseball. They could probably pull this off if it's their day. And they don't have a solid start. I mean, Duckett gets 83, but Zach Rowley's gone for three. Ollie Pope has gone for three. Root only scores 18, and Harry Brook goes for four. So effectively, England are four down for 45 when Ben Stokes walks out. And at this moment, you're feeling, okay, 371 runs is surely off the table. But there's a man who has a penchant of pulling off special innings, and that guy is Ben Stokes. Jared, these are the early days of you and I working together. I'm pretty sure we covered this test or reviewed this test on this very channel as well. And I mean, it was a marvelous knock. It's the last time we really saw him do something special in tests. And, you know, we remember Headingley because he got England over the line. We remember the ODI World Cup final and the T20 World Cup final that Ben Stokes wins, because those are those clutch moments where he's the hero. But this is probably 100 that might get forgotten, because England ultimately, they fall, what, how many runs short? 43 runs short. But up until Stokes was out there, everyone was talking about Headingley, talking about how Stokes is the guy who can get this job done. And up until, you know, Australia get his wicket, England are very much in this chase. He falls when England are six down for 301. And then, of course, they don't put up much of a fight, 327 all out. But this was a spectacular innings. It made for phenomenal viewing, box office, and he hasn't really shown up with the bat since.
Yeah, that is fascinating, isn't
yeah.
it? The problem with this innings is that most people forgot it because something else happened in that innings.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course. A lot of things happened in that test match, but that innings is remembered for the Johnny Bairstow stumping.
Yeah, so weirdly enough, it's not a particularly famous innings. Mm. As you said as well, I do think there is something about, there's just something about, I think Kumar Sangakkara's innings, I know you guys, you might say that Sachin's is over the top, but you could argue the same with Sachin's is, these are some of the greatest innings of all time, and they're not really rated that highly, and the reason is the team hasn't won.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. And, you know, Virat Kohli, I think, as I said before, because of the entire game, gets it. But like, you guys should probably know about the Derek Randall innings, right? Like, Derek Randall did nothing, you know, he didn't have a great career. He had this one incredible moment when the whole cricket world was watching what was essentially almost like a World Test Championship final, not in terms of ratings or anything, but in terms of this is the centenary test. Everyone was watching it and people don't know it. And I think this Stokes innings is part of it's kind of part of that as well, where people have just kind of forgotten it, and it deserves to be there. But I also think, yeah, that the Bairstow part of it plays a huge part.
It wasn't just the Bairstow thing, right? It didn't end there. It went to the long room, and that became news left, right, and center. Exactly. So it did kind of overshadow.
Also, remember, that was the bouncer game, right?
Yes, it was.
So it was a bouncer game. You had Lyon not being able to walk. Like, it was just a huge game. You had the Mitchell Stark catch that.
True, that was the same game.
Yeah. Like, so many things were happening back to back to back that Stokes has not just got, you know, a little bit forgotten about. Yeah.
And I mean, it's a top bowling attack that he scores this against. It's the Cartel. And there's no Nathan Lyon because, of course, he was injured. But I guess you could make a case that maybe the fast bowlers got a bit tired with Lyon injured.
Yeah, probably. I mean, you know.
But they didn't really know what was happening, right? Like, Stokes is just going for it.
Yeah.
And but it seemed like they didn't have an answer to what he was doing.
The difference between Stokes and Astill is that with Astill, they probably, New Zealand thought that this game is done and he's just having a whack. With Stokes, everyone believed that he could put, genuinely get England over the line. And I remember, like, there's another thing from this test match, by the way, Nathan Lyon hobbling down to the long room prior to the batter getting out so that he can make it out and not get timed out.
Is he listening to us,
no,
Estelle?
I just remembered that. But anyway, solid knock. And of course, I will pick Stokesy in my list. Shayan and Varun, you can make fun of me later. And yeah, Estelle, now it's back to you for back-to-back picks. But before that, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are watching Crick Picks with Jared, Behram and Estelle. Go nowhere. We will be back very, very shortly. Welcome back to Crick Picks. You guys are with Jared, Behram and Estelle, and we are currently drafting the best ever fourth innings hundreds in a losing cause. We're back to Estelle for her second round of back-to-back picks, and she kind of told us not to expect much with her second pick, so I'm really curious where she goes now.
Yeah, before I go to that, I just a thought on Nathan Astill. Is it... Now, when we compare his knock to like Sangha's knock, or, you know, as you said, Ben Stokes, Astill was a very like an unorthodox batter, right? He didn't look good or technically correct or whatever. So it always did look like he was just throwing the bat at stuff, right? I don't know. I didn't really watch that game.
I think the 2002 element, that it's so long ago in terms of like scores being chased down. This is even before West Indies and, you know, that Sawan game where they chased down 418 odd, which is the current record, right? At that point, I don't think teams genuinely believe that amount of runs could be chased in the fourth innings. That changes with Ben Stokes and the rest.
Mm. Yeah, because he'd done it before.
Are you buying yourself time?
Yes, she always.
No. because I told you guys, like, don't have high expectations, because mine is completely biased. My picks are going to be completely biased.
Okay. So, well, don't bring up Nathan Astill for a fourth time in this podcast. He's had his time. You know, enough airtime.
Nathan Astill was my second favorite cricketer growing up. Oh, so damn. I had to.
And you just slagged him off. Not aesthetically pleasing, not fun to watch.
I
didn't say not
weird.
Good to watch, but I meant like, you know, he's not like Sangha. Sangha looks in control.
It's the bowling. Nathan Astill.
Does anyone remember that time that Estelle was supposed to pick her third choice?
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go with another one from a Sri Lanka game, but not by a Sri Lankan. I'm going with Moeen Ali's 108.
Yeah.
This was in that famous series that Sri Lanka won 1-0 in England 2014. So this game was at Leeds. And he came in to bat famous for Angelo Matthews's incredible knock, the 160. England set a target of 350. Moeen Ali comes in at 4 for 50. And then he just keeps going. I don't think England at that point were looking at a win, but he was trying to survive the day, and he had like support from James Anderson. 55 balls for zero. Stuart Broad 24 balls for zero as well. But he just kept going and going and going. It didn't feel like Sri Lanka had any chance of getting him out. And it really looked like he would end up taking England to a draw. And that would have meant that the series would have been a draw as well, right? Because Sri Lanka had drawn the previous couple of games. So that innings, it wasn't like a flashy innings or anything, you know, out of the ordinary in terms of the way... the flair in that innings, but just in the situation coming in when it was pretty much lost, right? 45 or 54-4. The way
I can tell you exactly what it was if you want.
Yeah.
So they went in late on. So hilariously, Sri Lanka ended up in a situation where they basically batted for as long as they wanted to, like they were bossing the game, despite the fact they were miles behind in the game until that one partnership. And then they were 57 for 5 at Stumps, England, right? And everyone thought the game would be over by lunch.
Yep.
And Moeen Ali just kept going and going. And as you said, people at the other end helped him, but it was basically him on his own pushing them all the way there. And we'd had the test before, which was the draw off the last ball when – was there a drop catch or something off the second last ball or an edge?
Second last ball was given LBW, reviewed, that's not right. out. And then the last one, he edges it and it falls short of slip.
Exactly. And it was an incredible end. And so we were like, oh, it's going to end the same way here. It's going to be another fascinating draw. And then, because this was the big piece I had, the Pearl and the Bank Clerk, where I wrote the big piece about Sri Lankan cricket. And then Jimmy Anderson started crying after that. He did an interview with Athers and like was crying. He was so upset that he had lost that test. And I don't think any of it, like Moeen Ali played a lot of other innings. He never played an innings, anything like this before that I've ever seen.
And you know what's remarkable? This was his second test match. It was his debut series. And the previous test was his debut. This was Moeen Ali when he hadn't really cemented his spot in England's test team. And I think this
innings, and had been picked as a bowler.
Yes. Because bowler, he could bowl off spin, right? But this red inker, by the way, 108 not out of 281, it really kind of solidified his credentials as a test player and test batter in particular. And he survived Dhamika Prasad, right? That needs to be kind of echoed because he was unplayable in this test match. And I had this quite high as well. I think if I got my turn again, I would have picked Moeen Ali as well.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, that bowling attack, I mean, nothing special, right? Sri Lanka's got Nuwan Pradeep, Shaminder Ranga, who, like, after that series, we didn't really see much of. Herath, of course, Angelo and Dhamika Prasad. So, but in that series, they were something else, right?
Yeah. No, that's why they won it as well, and it's an historic moment. Also, weirdly enough, 2014 has featured twice on this list. What a year. Kohli and Moeen Ali.
What a year for losing.
What a year for losing. Anyway, Stel.
Okay, so my last one is going to be David Warner's 123 against New Zealand in Hobart, chasing 241. I was also kind of considered Behram's idea on like the margin, right, to have brought the team that close because it was a low scoring game. 150 for New Zealand, 150 and 226 for New Zealand, 136 and 233 for Australia, right? So it was a low scoring game. He gets 123 in that last innings. He is not out, is he? Yeah. He's not out at the end.
Carries his bat.
And they lose by just 7 runs. So that was in an era where you would have thought that Australia probably were the better side on paper. To have gone through a test like that in a low-scoring game and made that knock at the end, I think, one of the better ones I've seen.
That was just as the bowling lineup was sort of starting to come together, although he hammered them all, but it was Trent Bolt and Southee with Chris Martin, experienced bowler, and then Doug Bracewell, who was a good all-rounder, who I think
Bracewell
took all the
wickets. Bracewell has 6 wickets in that innings,
Also,
probably didn't get the best out of himself, but he could play.
I'm looking at the scorecard over here. Dean Brownlee scores a half century in the first innings. And then after that, there is only 150 by Ross Taylor. Yeah. That's it. And then Warner.
That innings, 123 for Warner. And the second highest score is 23 by Khawaja, right? Yeah. And there are 1, 2, 3 ducks, 4, 5, 6, and 7.
They actually scored the highest score in the game in the fourth innings and lost.
I mean, look, 123 runs, that too, unbeaten, right? He carries his bat out of 233. He scores most of Australia's runs as well. No one else is scoring anything. And I mean, this is also Warner when he's kind of young, right? This is not Warner when he has evolved to his kind of monster version. So I had it quite high as well. And this was actually number 3 on both the metrics that I had Varun pick out. Percentage of team runs and margin of defeat. So it's a very solid knock. Okay, also.
No, that was a good one.
Just realized we have had 2014 featured twice. And now Hobart has also featured twice. 2007 and 2011. So shout out to the Bellarine
Hobart's Oval. Weirdly, it doesn't have a great reputation in world cricket or anything. But it's had some of the best fourth innings. Because it's also had the Gilchrist-Langer partnership.
True. The Pakistan game, 99.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, I mean, there's it doesn't play that many test matches either. But weirdly, when it does, they seem to come down to the end.
True.
Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumper turned the nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting.
All right, now I have a few hundreds over here that I can kind of consider. This would be a great moment for me to throw in a random anecdote, but I'm really struggling. And I'm just trying to look for this innings, actually. I've made up my mind. So, funnily enough, right, we've had Hobart feature twice and 2014 feature twice. This one is going to shock you guys. We are going to have Moeen feature twice. My fourth pick is Moeen Khan. Moeen Khan versus Sri Lanka, 1991 in Sialkot. And a pretty random test match. Yes, and this is the wrong test match as well. I've completely messed this up. But it was Moeen Khan in Sialkot. And he scored 117 runs in the fourth innings. And Pakistan basically just folded. Like, there was no one else who did anything. I have found the test match. It was 1995, right? And
It was in Sialkot, though, so you were at least half right.
I was half right. I mean, look, I Googled Moeen Khan Sialkot because Varun was like, oh my God, what is this innings? And I was like, damn, it's the highest for percentage of runs by a batter in a fourth innings, like 100 in a losing cause, right? So
I don't remember this at all. And it's worth saying that in my book, I said that Yunus Khan is the greatest fourth innings batter of all time. And I didn't realize there might be a better Khan from Pakistan.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think Moeen Khan has done much significant stuff with the bat in test cricket at all. He was a pretty solid ODI lower order hitter, but he isn't really known for his test exploits. Just to kind of give people a lowdown on what happened in this test match in 1995, Sialkot. Sri Lanka bat first, scored 232.
For those of you who don't remember it.
Yeah. Pakistan doesn't have a great bowling attack over here. Akib Javed, Mohammad Akram, Amir, Nazir, Atau Rahman. So no Waqar, no Wasim. And Sri Lanka scored 232. Then Pakistan fold for 214. Not a single batter scores 50. Sri Lanka come and post 338 for 9. They declare. And Pakistan are now chasing 357 in the fourth innings. So they didn't get close. This is not one of those games where Moeen Khan seemed like he was going to win the test match for Pakistan. But in an innings where the second best score is 27 by Basit Ali, Moeen Khan scores 117 runs unbeaten off 208 balls, and Pakistan are all out for 212. So amongst all fourth innings hundreds in a losing cause ever, Moeen Khan scored the most percentage of runs for the team. So that's higher than Warner.
This is the sort of thing that I've created Combox for, right? Because I'd love to do an event where we can get Moeen Khan to talk about this. Because how many times has anyone ever talked to him about it before? So I don't know if you guys know, but when I had Chris Gayle and Angelo Matthews on stage, I got them to recreate Angelo Matthews' first over in the 2009 World Cup semifinal. Because no one's ever talked about that. And it's crazy. You've got Gayle at one end watching all of West Indies be bowled out by Angelo fucking Matthews at the other end, right? Like... And so, like, and then you see a game like this, and when I do my research, I come across these things all the time, and there's nothing on it. Like, there's no, like, no one's ever written anything about it. There's no podcast talking about it. Moeen Khan isn't famous for this, and it's like, this is an incredible moment in cricket. It feels to me a little bit like the Astor one. And similar kind of players in that they both like to be aggressive, both like to play their shots. I think, just look at the scorecard. I know it may not look to this way to modern eyes, but clearly this looks like a tough pitch because no one else has a strike rate over above 20 really in this game, in this innings. And it feels like he just went a little bit, fuck it, and I'll go for it. But, I mean, he went for it and he makes 100 and no one else makes any runs. It's literally, just to be so clear here, they make 212, right? And I bet you Varun didn't look this up. I bet you what Varun looked up here is the percentage of runs that Moeen Khan made in the game.
Ooh.
But look at how many extras there are.
Right.
34 extras in this innings, Estelle, which tells me two things. One is there's 13 byes, so there's no, the wicketkeeper couldn't even stop the ball. Right? And that if you take out the extras, which was second top scorer, that makes Moeen Khan's innings even more insane.
Yep. Yeah. And this is a guy who didn't even average 29 with the bat in tests, right? So... Yeah. This is very fascinating. Yeah. I obviously haven't watched it. In 95, I was all but 1 year old.
It might not even be good video footage of it, mate.
Probably not. And this is all down to Varun because he was like, let's put these filters. I gave him one filter and he gave me the percentage of runs filter. And he was like, oh my God, how is Moeen Khan topping this list? And I was like, okay, surely this will make it to the 15 now.
No, that's a good one. I like that. All right, I'm going to go two of the oldest, crotchiest cricketers of all time who also share a trophy name together. Mm. Now, will I do it in that order or will I not? I'm going to go... I'm not. I'm going to go Gavaskar first.
Okay.
So in 1977, that is when World Series cricket happens. So this innings is a little, I don't want to say, it's not against Australia's best bowling attack that was available at that time. However, India were in Australia playing what was left of the Australian team, and they needed to chase at the Gabba 341, right? A monumental chase for an Indian team at the Gabba. And Gavaskar makes 113 from 264 balls, and they end up losing by 16 runs, right? And I said, it's not a full-strength team, Australia, but they did have Jeff Thompson and Wayne Clark, Alan Hurst, so it's not like their worst bowling attack that they've ever put out. The batting was probably a little bit more shaky, but there's still some bowling talent there. And to be an Indian in Australia and everyone, there was several points in that game where they thought he was going to get them over the line. And so he makes 113. When he's out, he's the sixth wicket. And they've only got 243 runs. So he scored almost half of their runs, despite being Gavaskar. And they end up crawling towards victory with, I think it was Bishan Bedi, maybe Prasanna, trying to get them over the line, knowing that they have Chandrasekhar at the end. So once they lose their ninth wicket, they basically forfeited their innings because Chandrasekhar can't hold a bat, right? So they really pushed that so far. And I think because of the world, that test is played at the exact same time that the first World Series match was played. And so having done the documentary on World Series cricket that has never been shown, I learned a lot about this. And so both of these games were happening at the same time. And there were two test matches being played in Australia, essentially, unofficial and official. And they're both absolute banger test matches, right? And people don't really remember them. And this is, I think, one of the best chases that we've ever seen in cricket. And unfortunately for them, they just couldn't quite get over the line at the end. And also, I would say this, there's another reason I'm putting Gavaskar on this list, is I think he plays the best non-100 in a chase ever, which is the one against Pakistan in
87.
Yeah, is that Karachi?
No,
it was in India, wasn't it?
Yes, I think that was in India.
Bangalore.
Yes.
Was it Bengaluru?
It is that Bangalore test, yes. Pakistan won that and won the series as well.
Exactly. And so I think that is also just an epic one. And then the other old crotchety bastard that I'm going to put in is Alan Border, who I think there's a bunch of Alan Border innings where he is not, he makes 100 and Australia lose. I don't know if it's two or three. And there's another one where I think he makes a high score as well when he's chasing with Jeff Thompson, and it looks like they're going to win and they lose at the end. And I wasn't sure which one to go. I'll tell you the first Border one, which is Manchester 81. So the Botham series, where Botham breaks Border's hand in the first innings, right?
Okay.
And Border bats for 7 hours in the second innings to make 100.
Wow.
Right? But I think there's a better one, and it's a very famous test match, and no one mentions Border for this, which is the MCG in, I've got to get the year, 1979, where Australia is, I think this is this World Series cricket? Yeah, World Series cricket. So Australia doesn't have a full strength team, and Pakistan set them a ridiculous amount of runs, which is, 382, and Border makes 105. And when he's out, they are so before he goes out, they're 305 for 3. And Border has basically won this game. But Bayram, why do Australia not win that game?
Why? Because he's got a broken.
It's a very famous test match. Bayram, 1979, MCG. MCG is your clue. Pakistan MCG.
Reverse swing?
The birth of reverse swing.
Right.
Happens. And Sarfraz goes through them and takes, he ends up taking 9 wickets. But what does he take, 7 for 1 or something at one stage?
Something like that.
Whatever
it's
it is.
It's his spell and Kurt Lee's spell versus Australia that are really famous.
Yeah, and so Border was going to win that test match, which is a ridiculous chase on what was an MCG pitch, which in general you couldn't bat on in the fourth innings. Although he also plays another really good innings at the MCG on a fourth innings. And almost gets them over the line. And really, I think if you're 305 for 3 chasing 382, you at least expect to get close. And they lose by 71 runs, which does tell you how quickly Sarfraz changed that. Yep. But again, I think that, I mean, if Sarfraz doesn't execute reverse swing perfectly in that moment, Australia win that test easily, I think. And that was all on the back of Alan Border, who is, you know, was playing a phenomenal innings before Sarfraz bowls him.
Yeah, I mean, that is a really fun anecdote because we all talk about Sarfraz's 9 for. We don't talk about Border's 100 in the fourth innings. So
yeah, it's not, just not mentioned. I mean, one of the more amazing things about Sarfraz is the fact that there were, he wasn't just dismissing new batters. Eventually, obviously, he was. But Kim Hughes made 84 as well. Mm. Like, and Border and Hughes were just chugging along. I want to see how many overs. Yeah, they're going about 3 runs at over. They were just chugging along getting there. And then they were defeated by literally one bowler. He takes 9 wickets. And I think the other one was a run out.
Okay, then. Well, you did steal my Sunny Gavaskar pick because that was my last pick. So I did hear most of your story, but I was kind of looking for my last pick in the meantime as well. Otherwise, I would have definitely...
Also the right way to do it.
I would have definitely gotten to Sarfraz earlier than I did. And look, it's weird. The GABA has been mentioned twice already. Hobart has been mentioned twice. 1977. Yep.
2014.
Moeen.
We've got 2 Moeens. Yeah. I mean, it's all happening.
It really is. I'm confused between 200s because I was doing some solid research and there's one more mainstream one which I remember. And there's one, there's a super hipster one by another Pakistani, which no one remembers. I didn't even know this 100 existed. Which way do I go? Estelle's definitely going to pick the mainstream one if she's gotten there. Because it's between a West Indian and a Pakistani.
No,
because
I was... it's been so long since I've been on Cricket Picks. I thought 4 and I was done.
Oh, wow. That's just brilliant. That's why she said from my last pick when she was...
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, I was like, does she know it's going to come back to her? Anyway, man, this is tough work. Okay, no, I'll just go mainstream this time. Shiv Narayan Chandpal. 2007, another year that is now featured twice on the list. And this was at Old Trafford in Manchester versus England. England won the game by 60 runs, but bear in mind, they had set West Indies a target of 455 runs to chase down. This is also after Brian Lara has retired, so the West Indies aren't as strong a batting unit. And Shiv is unbeaten on 116 off 257 deliveries. He stays there till the very end, just runs out of partners. And he does get some support. Devon Smith scores 42. Runako Morton scores 54 off 145. Rest in peace, my man. That is quite an effort. And
I was gonna say, he died quite young, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Car accident. And then Dwayne Bravo, 49 off 71. So it's not like it was a complete one-man show by Shiv. But up until this moment... Was Shiv considered as one of the very best to have ever played the sport? No, right?
No. It's kind of the start of his run is this innings.
Yeah.
I mean, he might have made 100 before that. I can't remember in that year. But he averages 100 over 2 years. 2007, 2008. Then he has a one off year and then he averages over 50 and then over almost 100 again in 2012. So up until that point, I think everyone thought he was very talented, but he hadn't really gone on this run. And then suddenly, like, it all comes together. I've said this before. People don't remember. People always say, oh, you know, Brian Lara played with Hooper and he played with Chandrapal and he played with Jimmy Adams. And I was like, yeah, but if you look at their records, none of those guys averaged over 45 when they played with Lara, right? They all actually, unfortunately, had issues that they didn't get there. And with Chandrapal, I think one of the big losses we ever had is it took so long to find Pete Chandrapal, and by that stage, we'd lost Lara.
Yeah. I mean, it is a very, very classy knock. I do remember bits of this because I've been watching the English summer ever since, you know, I've kind of been following cricket. And Estelle, I'll let you pick your last one because this 100 that I've stumbled across really does deserve to be mentioned once you're done. It's crazy.
Okay, so I'm going with one that I would think neither one of you have on your list, Brendan Taylor against New Zealand. This is a one-off test in 2011. Zimbabwe are chasing 366 and they lose by just 34 runs.
Ooh.
The sad thing is that they were like, I think with 101 to go, they had 7 wickets in hand, right? And Taylor was going great. They were not ranked at that point, I think, because they were just coming back.
Yeah.
He makes 117 off 147. He's got some support from Taibu, who makes 63. So it was really Zimbabwe's game to lose. because of his innings, but his dismissal, they go from 265 to for 3 to 331 all out, right? And end up losing by 34. So that, I think that's another one of those forgotten ones, like the Moin Khan ones, where, you know, in the, we don't really talk about it, but if you, if it had come off, it would have been a pretty special kind of achievement, because it was a one-off test against New Zealand, right?
Yeah, and they had just returned to test cricket, right? Zimbabwe.
Also, it's 2011, which I think is really important. Because that gives us more 2011 ones.
Oh, okay.
But what else is fascinating about this is, I just had a look at the bowling attack. So it's Chris Martin, Doug Bracewell, Daniel Vittori, Jeetan Patel. So all solid test bowlers, and some obviously better than that. But they actually got off to a great, they were 157 for two when Mawayo was on 50. And he was dismissed by Martin Guptill, who bowled a ball down the leg side, right, that hit his pad, bounced onto his bat, and then went back onto the stumps down the leg side. So, like, not only did Taylor do this, Taylor and Mawayo, what would they have put on by that stage? Yeah, so they put on a 100-run partnership when Martin Guptill did the breakthrough. So, like, Zimbabwe had so many chances to win this game. But yeah, I mean, I don't remember this at all. I probably wrote about it at the time, if it was 2011. But
and also
incredible.
It's also, like, if you think about Zimbabwe, it's a game that they you would have expected them to go for a draw, right?
Yeah.
You know what's more remarkable than just 2011, Jared, is that both the 2011 games are New Zealand scraping away. You know, once versus Australia and once versus Zimbabwe. Mm. Where was this? Was this in New Zealand or Zimbabwe?
No, this was in Zimbabwe.
Okay, well, still.
This was in Bulawayo.
That's just crazy, man. I mean, the amount of doubles we've had in this one podcast has got to be some kind of record. But that's a solid pick, Estelle. You've really done
Taylor
well
goes
to end.
At 265, and I mean, they fall away from there. But to me, what was impressive is that, like, you would think that they would go for a draw, right? It's a one-off test. You come away with a draw in that situation, you're still good, right? But they go for the win.
Yeah, no, I quite like that pick. And I think we've done quite well in this podcast as well. A lot of these hundreds are equally important and hipster, right? Like, this is a good combination. And then we've got the pairs. I've even lost track at this point. Like, I don't remember how many pairs of things we have. But I have an honorary mention, and I'm sure that neither of you know about this hundred. I didn't know about it either. New Zealand versus Pakistan, first test, 1996, Gaddafi Stadium, Lahore. New Zealand are all out for 155 in the first innings. So, you know, Pakistan are rampant. Waqar takes a four-for. Mushi takes a four-for. Pakistan don't do much. 191 in the second innings of the game. Moin Khan once again top scores. 59 of 98, obviously. Of course. It has to be him, right? Then New Zealand come and they have a solid innings. Fleming scores an unbeaten 92. They post 311 and they've set Pakistan 276 runs to chase. And batting at, what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Someone who's traditionally an opener. Mohammad Wasim, right? I reckon he also might be on debut in this game. This might be his first ever test match. He scores an unbeaten 109 off 165. Pakistan are 231 all out and they fall short eventually by just 44 runs. Simon Dhul is player of the match. So many things have happened over here, right?
So I saw this in the list and there was something about, I should have looked it up because I remembered something about it as well.
It is his debut game.
It was his debut.
Yep.
And he was obviously, you know, quite young. I won't say he was 18 or 19, whatever he was linked at, but he was a younger player playing his first game. And when I flicked through it on the list, I was like, I should go back and have a look at that. And I completely forgot. But yeah, I do remember this one because it was, even though it was a New Zealand Pakistan test, which doesn't get a lot of attention at that point, it actually got a lot of attention because of the fact this young kid almost got them over the line, you know, in this, I mean, I almost got them, you know, got them close. And it was considered at that time a really big moment. But I can't think of a single time in my life ever since when it's ever been mentioned.
I do know that Mohammad Wasim scored 100 on debut as a youngster, right? And then he kind of falls off. And then he actually goes on to play a lot of cricket in New Zealand, which is another fascinating element of his career. But I was so confused between Shiv and this 100 by Mohammad Wasim. And so Estelle picked neither, which means that this 100 will go unpicked. But look, it's the best honorary mention on the list, I reckon.
There's so many cool things about this game. So Justin Vaughan was the opening batter for New Zealand, who went on to be their CEO for like forever. Lee Jamon was the captain who never played Test cricket before he became the captain. Yep. Like, you're just looking at these 11s going, there's a story of like almost every player here. Salim Malik, what happened to him? you know, so all these different incredible moments. But yeah, no, that's a very, very good pick. I'm trying to think what else I had. I couldn't find a great Gooch one, but I'm positive that Gooch had a great fourth innings loss, and I just don't know which one it was. I did spend a bit of time having a look at that, but that was the other big one that I wanted to talk about. Was I'm sure there's a Graham Gooch one somewhere along the line where he did very well. Maybe he just made 100 against the West Indies when the West Indies were crushing England and it stood out, but I'm pretty sure he had one good one in him.
Yeah, well, I think we've still done all right. Mohammad Wasim can be the spiritual 16th pick because it's just such a fascinating one. But anyway, Jared, can you go over our individual picks then?
Yeah. I went Kumar Sangakkara 2007, Asad Shafiq 2016, Derek Randall 1977, Sanal Gavaskar 1977, Alan Border 1979, Bayram went Sachin Tendulkar 1999, Virat Kohli 2014, Ben Stokes 2023, Moeen Khan 1995, Shivnarine Chanderpaul 2007, and Estelle went Nathan Astle 2002, Sanjay Saria 2004, Moeen Ali 2014, David Warner 2011, and Brendan Taylor 2011.
Well, there you have it. If we've missed an important fourth innings 100 that came in a losing cause, do let us know in the comment section below. And also let us know who you think wins this, because it's pretty tight. I think it's between me and Jared. Sorry, Estelle.
I like the Brendan Taylor one. Yeah. I think the Warner and the Taylor one are good late additions.
Now, the Taylor one is like a proper redemption arc. And Estelle didn't even know.
I don't know if you win for Moeen Khan either, but maybe you deserve to.
Yeah, maybe I should have picked Mohammad Wasim ahead of Moeen Khan now that I come to think of it, because he was a teenager and it was his debut game. But Estelle, your best pick was the one you didn't even know about. You thought you were done after four.
Yeah.
And anyway.
That would have, your list is way better because of that last minute random one.
Yeah. Anyway, you guys be the judge of who wins this, and continue to follow Combox everywhere. Like, share, subscribe. We'll be back with another Crick Picks episode next week. Till then, have a good one, enjoy yourselves, and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Ruckshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv. If you make any content, Minvo Pro is the tool for you. Take your long format content and cut it and slice it for social media. This AI-inspired weapon will turn your one piece of work into so many clips. Try Minvo.pro now.